This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life, and 3CR being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same. You could never understand.
Those who wish to control their own lives and move beyond existence as mere clients and consumers, those people ride bikes. That's from Wolfgang Sachs.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been, and we know.
Yes, let's work it out. As that prostate-pounding peloton is now Paris-bound, it's time to sit up, take a breath, let that heart rate settle down, and step away from the bike and listen to the Yarrabug radio show here on Radical Radio 3CR, streaming, podcasting, or listening on that transistor in the kitchen. We've got a good show coming up today. We're going to speak and highlight a couple of contributions to, I'm going to say, grassroots activity and activism, and a little bit of activism on a little bit of a higher plane. We've got Andrea from the Climate Action Marybeck to join us this morning. Good morning, Andrea.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on the show.
Pleasure. And Faith, the guiding hand, the hand on the tiller.
Good morning, Val.
Good morning. Oh, lovely bracing morning, beautiful morning, red sunset, sun's rise, very lovely thin crescent moon sitting in the northern sky.
Lovely clear skies.
It is actually. Great time to ride a bike, of course. Faith, have you got a bit of a bike moment to share with us?
I do. On the way here, I rode down the Brunswick East Shimmy and rode through Victoria Street, just north of Fleming Park in East Brunswick, where workers are busy putting in the permanent shared zone that a temporary one was done several years ago as part of some COVID projects. The effect has been to narrow the road space and hopefully slow cars down as they go past the park, which is a very busy area in a residential area where people collect and play sport and meet others and walk their dogs. And it's also where cyclists are moving north and south along the Brunswick East Shimmy. So those works are now being made permanent. Mm-hmm. And this morning you could see a little bit of progress in the sense that you can now see where the curbs will be aligned. Mm-hmm. So the temporary project narrowed the road in that it reclaimed some parking spaces to be used for seating and plants. The curbs on the north side at Ellsbury Avenue are now being realigned. So you can see that that side's also, there's going to be more space allocated to pedestrians. And that will effectively narrow the road there so that cars who, there's a shared zone, so the speed limit's been dropped to 20 through that section, but this will physically make that really clear. So that was good to see.
Yeah. Permanency and an improvement.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It would have been, I think, in our dreams, we saw the road surface being brought up to the footpath level. so that drivers really did get the sensation of they were driving through a space that was primarily for pedestrians and cyclists. Yeah. But there's all sorts of issues with drainage, and that would make it an extremely expensive project. So there's, you know, some changes being made to do as much as they can.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, so far it's looking good.
Oh. Look, I'll carry on just in the frame of, that you're going on there. Look, I know I find that motorists can be, and pedestrians, we all are a little bit confused about when cars have to give way to pedestrians. We know that, as the law says, roundabouts, the pedestrian doesn't have right of way when they're walking across. They've done two, I presume it's Melbourne City Council, two roundabouts in Powlett Street here just in East Richmond. They've put speed humps, there are two in a row, speed humps before the roundabout and pedestrian crossings on all those things. Has that been common a bit? Have you seen that?
We've got quite a few in Marybeck
now.
Yes, I live near Ewing Street in Brunswick, and they've put those speed humps and pedestrian crossings on the three roundabouts there, and it's fantastic. Most of the time, my neighbour said, who has a young child going to school, he on his bike, and the cars don't always stop, so it's not 100%.
Is there
safe
any
for
interaction
kids
where the cars always stop? Is there any?
I have observed
red lights, stop signs.
Well, I've observed that they it's a big change when I use it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's probably different for a young child who's small, less visible. And I'm an assertive pedestrian, so they do stop, or they get yelled at. I haven't had to yell at them there. But look, there are so many other roundabouts that are just horrendous. I've just been to Warrigal visiting my father, and the main roundabout in town is to get from the station to the shops is a nightmare to cross, and I hope, well, I'm going to write to the council, but it is a state government road, that they put in pedestrian crossings or even signalise the intersection, because it takes you several minutes to cross safely. Mm. Yeah.
And roundabouts were designed to facilitate car movements without having to do pedestrian crossing, without signals.
And I mean, a lot of motorists don't know the rules on a T intersection for a start with, so I can understand the absence of knowledge about some of those road rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, just before I get off, pipe moment, I know. Look, I had an interesting thing. Sometimes we lose track of actually how lovely riding a bike is. I've had a little bit of a stay at home for a couple of days over the last weekend and early this week. I'd forgotten how sometimes the healing process of riding a bike can really just kick you out of it. It was really great to just get that reinforced.
Yep.
It was really good. Listen, we're going to go to got a little bit of news. We should signal. I'll go first.
Yeah.
Those people who've read any of the papers or seen anything, Brian Dixon, ex State Minister for Sport and Recreation, better known for his work in setting up what was then called Bicycle Victoria, Bicycle Network. And look, a little bit of one of those, I'm going to say examples of a somebody in quite a position of power. He's quite a sportsman, Brian Dixon, so he had a very healthy name recognition and manner. He with Keith Stunson, I'm going to name Charlie and Paul Farron.
Mm.
There are a gang of them in those early years who really got before setting it up. So, Brian Dixon.
Yes. Back when it was the Bicycle Institute of Victoria, and it was a real grassroots member organisation. And just briefly, I mean, I think we'll look at this in greater depth in a future show, but a coroner has called for e-bikes to be registered as motorcycles. in findings released on Friday, which the Department of Transport has described as a radical measure. It's, you know, sometimes in response to terrible things, we come up with solutions that appear like a good idea. And I know that illegal e-bikes, the ones that you're not allowed to actually ride on the road in Australia, only on private property, are increasingly a problem. They've been a huge problem in Europe. Everyone's grappling with them, I think. But yeah, there's in her suggestion, there's no distinction made between the perfectly legal, very well controlled e-bikes that can't go beyond a certain speed and are being used by all sorts of people and families to get around, and between those that are essentially electric motorcycles. So definitely a problem that needs to be grappled with, but I don't know that registering every electric bicycle is the solution.
No, not a tough one. Listen, we'll be back to have a look at climate action, grassroots action, and how it starts. We'll be back just after this.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show on 3CR with Val and Faith and our guest, Andrea Bunting from Climate Action Merivale. We're here today to talk about John Englert, who regular listeners may remember from shows he's been a guest on, talking about some of the campaigns he's been running in the Inner North. And sadly, John passed away very suddenly, just on a week ago, leaving a big hole, I think, in the Inner North for climate activists and sustainable transport activists and friends and family, of course. Andrea, tell us how you knew John.
Thanks, Faith. I met John probably around 2013 when we started to get climate action. Well, it was Climate Action Moreland then it was. We got that going again. That had started a few years earlier, but we started meeting again regularly and getting more organised. So I've known John since then, and we've been active for the past 12 years. And he has been the convener. And a wealth of knowledge, I must say that. And keeping the organisation going, we've had a lot of protests, particularly directed at the federal government. So he regularly attends council meetings, and he does a climate environment summary of the council agenda, asks questions. So he's really keeping the helping to keep the climate issue at the forefront of governments at all levels. So we now have to ensure that we keep that valuable work going. I mean, there were many of us contributing, but John was such a figure And we need to, at the moment, we're trying to organise how we will move forward. It's only been a few days since we learned of John's death. And so there's been a lot of trying to get together, to grieve, of course, to work out what we're going to do going forward. Tomorrow morning there will be his regular vigil outside Peter Khalil's office. John had got them going, so we are gathering tomorrow at 11 till 1. If anyone wants to pop in, the Climate Choir will be there. So that's something that he was really keen to see a regular weekly vigil.
And I mean, you touched there on that encyclopedic knowledge John had. He was also very good at documenting that, and so that others could access it. Like you know, there's a whole series of websites on Blogspot and WordPress that contain all that knowledge documented around different campaigns and different issues that a lot of people have been relying on. But that was one of his strengths, wasn't it, being able to collate a lot of information?
It's just amazing the amount of things he's documented. I'm currently writing an obituary for the Brunswick Voice, and I'm going through his history, which is all documented, so it makes it very easy to write an obituary. He was going to protests in 1970.
Well, he was organising, one of the organisers of the uranium rides from Sydney in the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
Wasn't involved in the very first one in 75, but after that was. And you're right, documented those, which in a Friends of the Earth book, which, again, that role in not only being this really impressive campaigner, but providing the documentation and the history of those campaigns.
Yeah, well, John has donated his diaries, articles, photos from the 1970s, when he was in Sydney. He's donated them to the State Library of New South Wales, and so they have been archived, and there is some information there. He has a website that documents all that history, the history of anarchism, which he was also involved with.
He was a publisher. He was involved in some.
He was. Yep. So he had lots of he had blog sites and websites. We've obviously the Climate Action Marybeck one. We will keep that going. There are various other ones that we'll need to look at how they can be retained. But certainly the information he has there is invaluable. If you want to go back and look for something, some historical information, say about the Upfield Line, John has probably documented it somewhere.
Yeah. And he was, as a Marybeck Bug member, he joined Bug in 2007. And, you know, he was really active in writing submissions and especially north of Bell Street about issues there. But he was that great resource who, if you were writing a submission and thinking, well, what did that minister say in, you know, 2011 and how many times have they promised that? You would talk to John, or if you thought, I don't want to bother him, I know he's really busy standing outside Peter Khalil's office in the cold, you would just go to one of his many websites and you would be able to find the full history of all those campaigns and things there. So, he's going to leave a big hole for campaigners and advocates. I mean, obviously there is that stuff already documented, but going forward, the sort of person who can so meticulously collate so much information and share it is a really precious resource.
Well, he was doing this from, as I said, from 1970. And in those days, of course, you needed paper copies of that. And now there is so much information around, but we need people to sort of make sense of it.
The analysis.
And gather the, that sense making in a particular place. So it's a different type of task from the 1970s. But that work was very valuable. And I think this particular focus on our area, on our municipality, which is something we have to keep up that work, contributing to that. So I know that you're involved in, some Marybeck issues and Yarra issues. And so we have to keep up that work to document what is happening locally as well. Because one thing we always thought was what we do in our municipalities, in our local groups, can inspire others to other groups. So I know in Yarra and Marybeck, people are very active around climate, active transport.
Mooney Valley.
Yeah. There's a few of the inner city ones, but others, we can keep up that work to say we're doing this at a municipal level. And you can too, and here's some ideas.
Mm.
So I think that's very important to keep up that work, as well as documenting the bigger picture, the things happening at a national, international level, on state level.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of campaigns, I mean, John had a really engaging... I mean, he was a good campaigner. He knew how to engage people. His writing was more about documentation, but I think one of the most common things I've heard since he died is the sheer volume of people who say, I didn't know him well, but I saw him riding around Marybeck with his two chihuahuas and his basket on his bike. And
that's right, yes.
Juliet and Indiana Jones sat in a crate on the front of his cargo bike. The crate was covered in signs saying Chihuahuas for Climate Action. And people, I know he came on the regular Wednesday bug rides, and we could be in Craigieburn, in Ferntree Gully, in Mordialloc, in Altona. People always smiled when they saw him. There'd be 20 cyclists, but they'd smile at John. They'd want to stop and pat and talk to the dogs. And then he would just often, if he had time, lead them into this conversation, if they asked about the climate change signs, about whatever his current campaign was. Did you know the federal government are doing X? Did you know? And it was this incredibly engaging way to cross that bridge to talk to people, and make that connection. And in other campaigns, there was a sense of fun about his campaigns, even his approach to standing outside Peter Khalil's office each week. There was a sense of fun about a serious campaign, but he approached it with that sense of fun that I think made it easier for people to engage.
I remember when John and I attended the climate conference in Bonn in 2017, and he would have his frog, Kermit the Frog, and everything would have a photo of with Kermit the Frog.
Yeah,
and of course that would help engage people, and then the Chihuahuas have done a remarkable job in getting people to talk about climate. And if anyone is worried about the Chihuahuas, they have found a loving home. They will be adopted by another climate activist. So hopefully they can continue their great work in helping start those conversations.
Yeah. Mm. And it's the Chihuahuas have only been there a couple of years. Before that, there was a terrier. And critical mass in the 1990s, he had Hamish, his terrier, on a trailer. Yep. But also, you were remembering, Val, with critical mass, even then John had that sort of flamboyant come and talk to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrea, because obviously you knew him personally very well, I'm just wondering, was there some driving force behind it, or was just... that lovely personality of sharing things.
Well, I'm writing this up in the obituary, so you can read it there. But he has made reference to things that motivated him, trying to act with a social conscience, integrity, to help create a better world. So, you know, he was doing it quite consciously. In terms of how he engaged with people, I mean, that may have been his particular personal skills, but certainly he saw himself as, having a mission, I guess, but wanting to live in accordance with his values.
Yeah.
And
an ability to not get burnt out, you know, to actually be able to have that lovely nature that you don't seem to wind yourself up too much.
Well, he would, you know, most days would go to a local cafe he'd go to several around the place, so people knew him, so that was a chance to engage with people. I think he knew how to relax and enjoy himself.
But it is unusual to be able to maintain the level of campaigning commitment he had over such a long period. And that's, I think, another really precious part of it, that does it take optimism to do that? Not about the cause, but some inherent optimism in you?
Or? Optimism through action, I think, would be a better description. I'm not sure about John, a little bit sceptical by nature, but optimistic through what you do, which I'm not sure, but it seems to fit John a bit.
Yeah, no, you I'd know, say.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's probably it. I mean, you don't want to, even if things seem very bleak, we have to move forward and have optimism that we can, that people power can change things.
Yeah.
Sue Bolton, Councillor Sue Bolton, actually made a comment that, John had influenced at a council level, stopping them making wrong decisions. And I think his wealth of knowledge helped with that. But also he could convince people. He could turn around their opinions. And that's a gift. And it's very hard to do that.
And without being a prophesizer, which he was not.
You know. And maybe that's why.
Yes.
Because there was that very level engagement.
Yeah.
Well, we saw in the Peter Khalil posted something about him on Facebook, acknowledging him. And Peter said, John and I haven't always seen eye to eye, but I do respect, you know, what he's done. So I think, you know, he didn't, what's the word? He didn't worry about people in powerful positions offending them.
No.
I remember once when he made some tweet about the Australian government not doing something internationally on climate, and Julie Bishop, who was then the foreign minister, tweeted back.
Here we go.
I'm going to dig that out and put it in the obituary.
Even make it the title of the book. If you're not careful. Andrea, I've got to ask, the future of grassroots climate action in Marybeck, strong?
I hope so. So we have incorporated a year ago Climate Action Marybeck, mainly this was Faith's suggestion, so we could get some funding. And Maggie Cowling is now taking over as the convener. She was the deputy. She's got amazing people skills as well as good climate knowledge. And I'll be there helping with a lot of the admin. But we do have a good team.
Not good. The future looks good.
An important legacy.
It is.
Yes.
John's a role model, mentor, something to look to. Yes.
And as the news comes through of any arrangements made to celebrate John's life, we'll be adding that to the online podcast for people who are interested.
It's about all we've
got time for today. Coming up next is
Shebop.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.